Will the latest entrant to the crowded race for the Democratic presidential nomination shake up the standings as the impeachment process marches ahead? Our Politics Monday duo are here to examine it all. Amy Walter of the Cook Political Report and host of Public Radio's Politics with Amy Walter. And Tamara Keith from NPR. She co-hosts the NPR Politics podcast. Hello to both of you. Hello. So we have a little bit of news this evening on the impeachment, the tug of war between the president and the Congress, and that is a federal district judge has ruled that the president's former legal counsel, Don McGahn, must testify before lawmakers, before the Congress. We assume there will be an appeal, Tam, but this could set a precedent for other White House and administration officials to be required to go testify before the Congress. We don't know. We haven't heard what the Intelligence Committee report is. We know the Judiciary Committee's next. But all this raises, again, the question of the public's perception of this and where do we go? So, Amy, to you, what are we seeing in terms of the needle moving at all in how the public's reading this?
So we've had 2 weeks of hearings, which produced a lot of fireworks and a lot of coverage, but it really hasn't produced a lot of movement in the polls. We're basically where we've been since, well, October, basically, since before these hearings began. If you go and you look, 538.com has a great tracking measurement of all the polling that's been done on the issue of impeachment. And if you go back to the day before the public hearings began, support for impeachment was at 48%, 45% said they didn't approve of impeachment. Today, it's 46-46, which is essentially, in the world of numbers, very little movement to just sort of statistical around the edges. So what we're seeing, I think, is folks that who are already deeply engaged, who are paying attention to this, are paying attention to it because they were, are already sort of committed to whatever outcome they would like to see.
So, Tam, how much does this matter to members of the House of Representatives who are back in their districts, presumably this week, maybe heading toward a momentous vote?
Yeah, I mean, if they are hearing about it from their constituents, then that could affect behavior. But what we saw right before they left town is someone like Will Hurd. He's a congressman, retiring, is what I like to say. Republican retiring, has sort of the freedom of a retiring Republican. And he's always been sort of more moderate and also has been fairly outspoken about his concerns with President Trump. As the hearings were winding down last week, he came out, he's on the Intelligence Committee, and he said that he wasn't persuaded that this was impeachable. Certainly improper, but not impeachable. If Will Hurd is there, then Republican Congress members of Congress are not feeling pressure. Another example is Elise Stefanik, who at times has charted a more moderate course. She was closely allied with Paul Ryan, who had his issues with President Trump. Well, she became a star of the hearings for sort of pushing President Trump's viewpoint and position in those hearings. So these are two examples of Republican members of Congress who are not persuaded, and if House members, if these sorts of Republicans are not tempted to vote against the president, then there's no way that senators are going to feel pressure.
Right. Just quickly, it just looks like the two sides are growing farther
apart, or maybe they are just feeling more committed to their position, or just as committed as they were before this began. The Republicans, though, who should be concerned and are concerned right now, are in the Senate, on the Senate side, where you have Republicans up for re-election in blue states like Colorado and Maine and increasingly purple Arizona.
So we'll see, and they would come into play after the House voted
absolutely
on impeachment. So, to the 2020 Democratic race, we have a new entrant as of this weekend. He is none other than the former mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg, and he's out with a splash, Tam, $31 million in ads across the country. Here's an excerpt of the first ad they're running.
And now he's taking on him to rebuild a country and restore faith in the dream that defines us, where the wealthy will pay more in taxes and the middle class get their fair share. Everyone without health insurance can get it, and everyone who likes theirs keep it. And where jobs won't just help you get by, but get ahead. And on all those things, Mike Bloomberg intends to make good.
So, Tam, they're running that ad. That's just a short version of it in something like 46 of the 50 states. We've got a map here. Every state that's yellow on that map, they're running
the whole country
and spending $2+ million in New York City alone. $1.6 million in Los Angeles alone. This is $1.9 million. I'm sorry. This is huge.
Yeah. So this is going to test some things, some ideas in politics. One idea in politics that emerged after President Trump won with far less money than Hillary Clinton was, oh, well, maybe money doesn't matter. I guess we'll find out whether money matters, because he is in the process of trying to buy some love and attention. The other question, though, is traditionally, you can't skip the first few states and think that you're going to somehow have momentum after that. Ronna McDaniel, who is the chair of the RNC the other day, was saying that people who plant their flag in states after those first few states often find that momentum overtakes them.
But he's counting, Amy, on money overcoming a lot of this.
He's counting on a couple of things. It's really good that you pointed out Donald Trump, because he also went against conventional thinking, because even in the primaries, he didn't spend that much money. He was counting on his name ID and his ability to dominate the media landscape, right? Every minute of every day, he was being covered by cable news, and he took up all the political oxygen and all the traditional ways of campaigning, go and organize, you know, host these meet and greets with voters. It didn't matter.
It was called free media.
All of that up. Now, if you're Michael Bloomberg, it's a little bit different. Obviously, you're not getting free media. You're paying for it.
Right.
And the theory being, if you spend an amount of money like we've never seen before, ever seen before in American politics, by the time we hit post-South Carolina, so the very beginning of March, the theory being the process has so just sort of obliterated the field, right? Nobody's really a front runner. Everybody has all of this baggage, and they can turn to somebody who's just been on their airwaves and on their smartphones for the last couple of months telling them how great he is. Oh, all these other candidates look bad, say Democrats. They've all gotten beaten up. Why don't we turn to Michael Bloomberg? That's his theory. It's a big, big gamble. But that's what he's counting on happening.
But is there any history of somebody coming in late and making it work?
Not in modern history.
Not since we've had these early primaries.
That's right.
Yeah. 31 million in one week, there are a couple of weeks to go, a couple of months to go before we get to the post-early primaries. We will watch. Amy Walter, Tamara Keith, thank you both.
You're welcome. Keith.